live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be looking at how clean is your spinach and why you should be very careful when you're buying that triple washed, thinking you don't have to do anything, it's all clean. It isn't. Hypertensive patients benefit from acupuncture, according to the University of California. And this is what sitting too long does to your body. And I'll explain that in depth. University of California, Riverside. The health benefits of oregano and a lot more on health and healing. Then I'm going to hit a lot of short topics today that I select, and I spend a lot of time thinking about what is it we need that could empower us? How can we live a longer life? What choices are out there now? And I thought about the meat eaters. And according to Natasha Gelling, meat eaters are the number one cause of worldwide species extinction. So on the one hand, by paying attention to those who are well-intentioned, and certainly it's not a moral judgment, but it's simply what happens when you grow up in a culture where you're conditioned to believe, as I did, and everyone I grew up with, you have to have meat 3 times a day. That if your parents don't give you that meat, then they're not doing the right job. So what form the meat takes, well, that's our individual preference. You may like chicken or beef or pork chops. No one where I grew up liked liver, but you still had it because you were told it had a lot of iron and that was good for you. What no one told us was that it was contributing to global warming and deforestation and stressing places that were leading to an abundance of water becoming a deficiency of water. In fact, today we can accurately say that for every time you have any animal product, any, your steak, then you're actually killing a lemur in Madagascar. And if you eat chicken, you kill an Amazon parrot. How is that possible? We'll discuss it in a way that hopefully enlightens people so at least they're aware of the consequences of their choice and hopefully they'll make a better choice. Also today, why we cannot trust the mainstream media about drugs and vaccines from the Alliance for Natural Health. It's a short, insightful commentary, but an important one. Also, why our government is not changing, but aren't we the government? From John Whitehead, Tactics for Taking Down the Police State, from Op-Ed News. My guest in the second part of our program, and I'm setting aside more time than normal because I have not spoken with James Otto, my executive producer, and our scholar in residence, Richard Gale, has. And he said, Gary, this person is going to open up about the corruption of Hillary Clinton and other long-term U.S. polyagenda people and how the U.S. government and major corporations are capitalizing on firing American workers and replacing them with foreign immigrants on work visas. What does this mean? It means that it's generally stated that the last hired, first fired. Now, I believe that there's a high probability, not an absolute certainty, but a probability, that beginning in mid-October until about mid-January, we will see several different indices and indicators dropping. That also could mean that we could have an enormous amount of financial challenges. One report says from John Fassine from The Telegraph, a highly respected publication, quote, doomsday clock for global market crash strikes 1 minute to midnight as central banks lose control. China currency devaluation signals endgame, leaving equity markets free to collapse under the weight of impossible expectations. Well, another one talks about trumping the federal deficit without playing the default card, Ellen Brown. I must have 9 major articles, all from highly respected people, all saying the same thing. We're in for a major crisis. So let's just say that we have, at some measure, the crisis occurs. First thing that's going to happen is people are going to stop buying stuff. Other people are going to have to stop producing stuff, at least the same amount. There'll be a constriction. The constriction could take about half of all equity out of Wall Street, which is a good thing, in my opinion, since it's been just one giant bubble for the last 5.5, 6 years. But it also means people are going to start getting fired. Now, here is why my guest today is so important. Because now, a group of lawyers, and we actually have a recording of one of their sessions, so we know exactly what their motive is. They're meeting with major corporations saying, look, how much are you paying a 20-year employee, 30-year employee that has seniority and, well, $150,000, $200,000 plus holidays and bonuses? What if we could get you the same quality of workmanship with a PhD in that specialization from India or Thailand or Laos or China or South Korea or Russia? But you don't have to pay them more than $50,000. So you're saving 75%. Oh, and you don't have to be giving them any health insurance, holidays, no paid holidays, and you don't have to do any of the things you normally would do. Wow, you mean I can get rid of all these very expensive employees? Yeah. So we're going to see the major gutting of the, what we would call, unofficial tenured employees, the ones who are so good because they've been there so long and so knowledgeable, they could do any part of a company, they're going to be the ones going because they're also the most expensive. And in are coming these people. This is all on these special immigrant, foreign immigrant work visas. James Otto, a civil rights attorney specializing in the protection of American workers and green card holders from illegal civil rights violations, will be my guest. So for the Democrats, you think Hillary, now that she will look at what is garnering the positive response from Bernie Sanders, is going to be having a lot of focus meetings? Now, Hillary, we want you to act like you believe in better working conditions and safer job positions for American workers. This guy's going to tell you about Hillary in ways you haven't heard before. So that's our show. We have a lot to share. Let's begin. For a long time, people thought that acupuncture was simply some esoteric oriental voodoo. American scientists didn't believe in it. But after over 30 years of clinical studies, it was found that it has merit. In fact, so much merit that it became a fully accredited practice where you could become licensed in the state by taking all of your courses and putting in your hours. But the average American doesn't go to an acupuncturist. My goodness, it took them decades to go to a chiropractor. But they should. Acupuncture has an enormous amount of benefit. This is from the University of California at Irvine. Quote, patients with hypertension, that's high blood pressure, treated with acupuncture experienced drops in their blood pressure that lasted up to a month and a half. Wow. Their work is the first to scientifically confirm that this ancient Chinese practice is beneficial in treating mild to moderate hypertension and indicates that regular use could help people control their blood pressure and lessen the risk of stroke and heart disease. Quote from the study. This clinical study is the culmination of more than a decade of bench research in this area, said Dr. John Longhurst, University of California cardiologist and former director of the Samuli Center. By using Western scientific rigor to validate an ancient Eastern therapy, we feel we have integrated Chinese and Western medicine and provided a beneficial guideline for treating a disease that affects millions of Americans in the U.S., end quote. So there you have it. How big of a improvement was it? 41%. Wow. And then it also helped their blood glucose level by 67%. So remember, it helps with pain, it helps with energy, it helps with adrenal fatigue, and now can help lower your blood pressure. There were a bunch of us, including my brothers, went on a trip. We went on a trip throughout Italy. The purpose of the trip was simple. I wanted to see if I could determine a difference by interviewing public health officials in the cities like Milan, which is the financial and garment capital of Italy, versus in the country versus the suburbs, much like in the United States. What's the difference living in New York City versus the suburbs versus the country? And there's sometimes substantial differences. So we spent quite some time there. And of course, there are no bad restaurants that I found in Italy. Same in France. What they considered a mediocre Italian restaurant, we would consider outstanding food and service. But in all cases, I would not eat the salads. And they were laughing. Of course, they were always laughing. Part of growing up in a family of boys is, you know, the form of humiliation you have to take. Now, Gary's a rabbit. Gary, do you want to go outside, see if there's something outside you could eat in the grass? And you have no idea what it's like growing up in the middle of the boys. The youngest, of course, is closest to God. Can never ask the little one to do anything. And the older one is, well, the saint. It's in the middle where you get hammered. In any case, that's fine because it was all good. But when it came to that salad, I wasn't about to eat it. They said, why not? I said, because you're not in the kitchen. You're not watching to see if they're busy. They're not going to wash that. They're going to dip it in some water, maybe spray it for a second. That doesn't clean it, even if it's organic. So what I would do, and I normally do this, I would go to the farmer's market, and I would buy a wonderful variety of vegetables and salad greens, and I would take it back to my room. And I would wash it myself. And how is the proper way to wash all forms of lettuce? All forms. First, you put on a cleansing material, generally some kind of veggie wash. If you don't have that, apple cider vinegar will do, even hydrogen peroxide diluted, 10 to 1 in water. And then you massage the leaf. Now, why would you massage a lettuce leaf? Because the lettuce leaf has folds, crevices, little nooks and crannies. It's not flat. It's not like washing an apple. So you massage in there, and that loosens the debris that you wouldn't see. And a speck of dirt so small you couldn't see it is enough to make a 400-pound man have massive diarrhea, amoebic dysentery, and be for a week in bed. So by massaging it and then rinsing it, that's the first step. Then you put it into a bowl, and you put water in the bowl, and you agitate it. You just kind of shake your hand back and forth, and that gets any final debris out, and you do that 3 times. Now it's clean. Okay, then I put it in a bag, and then I'd go in the restaurant, and I would say, how much is your most expensive salad? Oh, it's $5, $9. I'd say, okay. Would you mind, because I have some special health needs, if I paid you for a salad, but I use my own and use your salad dressing? And they always, especially the Italians, are so accommodating in their restaurants. And they would always do that. So I'd had this huge salad and whatever else that I found that was particularly good, like some roasted rosemary potatoes with the way that's done with the, where they baste it in garlic. They, no one in America, as I have ever seen, baste a roasted potato in a garlic, and they do there. In fact, what they frequently do, I've never seen this before, but I've tried it since. They take a huge elephant garlic, and they roast it. Then they do an imprint with their fingers. They push it in, and then they put your potato inside that. Now, you talk about having a potato that is outrageously delicious. Try this. Elephant garlic, you peel it, you roast it. Now it's soft. Then you put it on a, in a bowl, and you take your fingers or a spoon, and you make an indentation, much like hollowing out, let's say, an orange. Cut the top of the orange off. I just did this yesterday for everyone. I want to make them all fun dessert. And so I took some oranges. You wash the orange. Always wash everything. You wash the orange. Then you cut the top one-third off. And then you scoop out the orange. And you put it into a blender. Then you put into that blender some, in this case, it was macadamia raw sprouted nut butter. Don't get any better than that. That's the Rolls Royce. And then put in some anise powder, but not seed. And then I put in there a little bit of stevia, vanilla stevia, and also some fresh mint. And you stir that around, and then you stuff that back into the orange. And then if you want to do something really special, you simply take some raspberries and blackberries. You blend them together with a little bit of coconut milk, and then you drizzle that over the top. It took maybe 10 minutes, but it's a delicious dessert and easy to make, inexpensive, and absolutely a nutrition powerhouse and tastes divine. Anyhow, you do the same thing with the garlic. You make an impression, then you take your roasted potatoes, and never take a potato roasted till it's brown. Then you've created acrylamides, and that's a cancer-causing agent. Instead, till it's just soft enough to stick a fork in. That means you have to bring your temperature way down. It takes longer to cook, but it's a lot healthier, and it's a lot more tasty because the natural sugars in the potato begin to mature. When you cook something too fast, you don't have a natural ripening process. That's why an Italian authentic in Italy made sauce, it takes a long time to make because they put it on a very low temperature, and then they add their seasonings gradually so it all breaks down and blends, and it's sweet and unique in its taste, where we just throw something on it and put a high flame under it, and it becomes a bitter. Well, there the garlic is soft, and the potato is not brown, but it's ready. And then you put your extra virgin organic olive oil on it, some Himalayan sea salt, some black pepper, and it's just a wonderful dish. In any case, and of course, then I'm having the healthy salad. While they're all looking at me and figuring out how many more jokes can we make about Gary and his eccentric or idiosyncratic behavior during this meal. And of course, what was really fun was the next morning when three of my friends and family members were in bed with massive diarrhea. Not a good place to be in bed when you have maybe dysentery. And because, well, the salad wasn't clean. So I never, under any circumstances, eat anything that I haven't cleaned, because I know how I clean stuff. I don't know how other people do. This is in the University of California, Riverside. Quote, researchers believe peaks and valleys in baby spinach leaves could be a key reason why there have been numerous bacterial outbreaks involving green leafy vegetables. Ever wonder what that word triple or words triple washed or pre-washed on a bag of baby spinach means? Not much, according to engineers at the University of California, Riverside. They discovered that small peaks and valleys, that's what I was talking about, crevices in baby spinach, but it's true of all lettuces, could be a key reason why there have been numerous bacterial outbreaks. Current disinfection is put into the rinse water and not specifically applied to the leaf surface. The researchers in the Bourne's College of Engineering found that because of the varied topography of the spinach leaf, nearly 15% of the leaf surface may reach concentrations as low as 1,000 times that of the bleach disinfectant being used to rinse it. As a result, as the leaves move through the processing facility, after being rinsed, the bacteria may continue to live, grow, spread, and contaminate other leaves and surfaces within the facility. Following rinsing under the low bleach condition, upwards of 90% of the adhered bacteria were observed to remain attached to and survive the leaf surface. Let me repeat that. This is after they bleached it. And who knew that they were bleaching our lettuces, right? 90% of the bacteria were still surviving. So, that's why, and this was presented at the American Chemical Society National Meeting, and an entitled talk, "Is Our Salad Safe?" The answer is no. So no matter what salad you get, where you get it, no matter what it says, don't believe it. Wash it yourself. It's that simple. And you're not going to get a clean lettuce in any restaurant that I know of in the world. Now, finally, oregano. Oregano is what a lot of people understand, mainly because they've eaten it on pizzas. But in point of fact, it is my opinion that oregano, the Oreganum vulgare, it's a member of the mint family, and it is one of the most important culinary herbs you could possibly get, and you can grow it yourself. It's very easy. Why should we use it? First, because it's an extraordinarily powerful natural antioxidant. It inhibits lipid peroxidation, the breaking down of fats into free radicals. It is stronger than paprika, cumin, saffron. It really works. Only rosemary is equal to it as an antioxidant. And it is great because it can inhibit foodborne fungi. And it's been shown to kill Aspergillus. That's a disease-causing food mold, and it's very important. And they use it a lot in Italy in their processing, especially in the jars where they're allowing to age olives or eggplant or peppers, because it's a natural antibacterial side. It can kill off Staphylococcus aureus and Pseudomonas. The oil is phenomenal, and the leaves are good as well. So it's anti-ulcer. It has anti-cancer properties. If you have gastric ulcers, understand it has very strong potential. And if you have a glioblastoma, which is a brain cancer, oregano was shown to cause suicide death in the cancer cells. So, and it can also kill colon cancer cells. So the takeaway message is, our herb of the day to use in more of our dishes and to have a bottle of the oil, not 2 ounce, 3 ounce jar, it's inexpensive, $10, whatever. Always have it with you because it can make a difference. Now, had I had wild oregano oil on that trip to Italy, I could have immediately put that and some colloidal silver into a glass. 20 drops colloidal silver, 20 drops wild oregano oil, also 20 drops of olive leaf extract, and 1 teaspoon of bee propolis. Stir that around with manuka honey, and then follow that with 4 ounces of aloe vera, and those people would have been up out of there in like 1 day instead of a week. Oh, And that's exactly what happened. Oh, and did I tell you about how they were playing all kinds of jokes on me? Oh, what's that, Gary? You're putting on the dresser. Is that one of your magics? Yeah, it was. It was magical to them that they were up and enjoying the country instead of being on the toilet for the rest of the week with a raw rear end. Just remember, those are the things you should take with you and use on a daily basis. I'm Gary Knoll, back in a moment. Please stay with us.
I only meant to love you. Didn't you know it, babe? Didn't you know it? Why couldn't you be content with the love I gave? Oh, yeah. I gave you my heart, but you wanted my mind. Oh, yeah. Your love scared me to death, girl. All it's a choking kind, that's all it is. You can kill a man with a bottle of poison.
I'd like to welcome you. We have listeners all over the world, and you're always invited. And always we look at what are the issues that can impact all of us. That's why I don't do just regional or social issues. There are many other programs that do an outstanding job for local issues. I try to take on the issues that empower us, either by showing something we didn't know that we can stop knowing more of what we need to do. Our guest we're going to go to in just a few moments, James Otto, in Northridge, California, to talk about the U.S. government and other major corporations capitalizing on firing American workers and replacing them with foreign immigrants on work visas, and why this is done very quietly. Now, we're not talking about immigrants coming across the border in Mexico or Canada. These are legal, and here's the irony. The people are angry at illegal immigrants coming across the border and have no sense of humanity to their plight, and even how we may directly or indirectly have contributed to that by 50 years of U.S. foreign policy of, in effect, colonizing them and then commodifying their natural resources to our need, and then regime changes in Honduras, in Colombia, in Peru, in Argentina, in the countries that now you have this refugee, and especially the Sandinista population. We contributed to that, and yet we take no responsibility. But the same legislator who rails against that will very quickly support replacing an American who's been at work for 30 years, honest, diligent, paying their taxes, good community member, and firing them so that another person, who I do not blame, if you have worked hard for a PhD in South Korea, China, or a master's degree, or you've mastered something that gives you a talent, that's not a negative. The fact that our government has worked with corporate interests and major law firms to take away Americans' jobs, that's the issue. And the hypocrisy is palpable. We'll deal with that in a few minutes. But I wanted to share with you today, before we go to him, the idea that we should really examine the consequences of the choices we make in life, and responsible people do. Do we think about the cigarette we're smoking, the drug we're taking, the medication we're taking, the people we're voting for, the television we're watching, the ads on television we're watching? There's a consequence to all that, either constructive or destructive, at some measure. Well, according to Natasha Gelling, the meat-inclusive diet, which is the major food source of most Americans, it comes with a side of environmental caveats, including livestock's contribution to global warming and its contribution to deforestation and the stress it places on a bevy of increasingly precious resources. I'm talking about water and land. Now a group of researchers want to add another concern to the meat eater's plate. worldwide species extinction. You heard me right. I just read an article in Science of the Total Environment by researchers at Florida International University in Miami. They're saying in this article, well done, by the way, livestock production's impact on land use is, quote, likely, listen carefully, the leading cause of modern species extinctions. Wow, a problem the researchers think will only get worse as population growth increases and the global demand for meat increases. Now, from my perspective, the study is particularly interesting to scientists because research linking livestock's relationship to biodiversity has been completely lacking. But now we must ask ourselves, at the beginning of the program I said, would you ever imagine that by you eating a steak, you're also killing a lemur in Madagascar? Or if you eat chicken, you're killing an Amazonian parrot. But it's true. To understand livestock's production impact on biodiversity, researchers at Florida International University mapped areas that have exceptionally high percentages of native plants and animal species known as biodiversity hotspots. And the researchers then mapped areas where livestock production is expected to increase in the future and determine how much land would be lost as a result of expanding meat operations. And using data from the Food and Agriculture Organization and other studies, they mapped this out. And they compared the biodiversity hotspots with the expected expansion of meat production. And they found that the areas expected to have the greatest conversion of land for agriculture from forest to land dedicated to livestock production, what they call the mega diverse countries that had the greatest diversity of species, will end up being absolutely decimated. How serious is it? Let me give a perspective. If I told you that it was 3 million square kilometers, most of you would not know what is a kilometer, what is a measurement to a mile or an acre. Let me put it in perspective. At the rate we're going right now, within the next 2 to 3 years, just for livestock, for humans to eat, because of the increasing affluency of the Indian, Brazilian, and the Chinese populations, just the upper mobile, educated, and affluent groups now represent over, are you ready for this? Over 1 billion people. 1 billion. Or put it this way, you have more educated, affluent people in India, Russia, China, Brazil than you have by 300% of all Americans. So, how much? 741 million acres. That's 741 million acres. Wow. That is a huge amount of land. And this is leading to what they call the sixth mass extinction, caused largely by human activities. So, if we care at all about the world we live in, the planet and its resources, then we have to stop our free market liberalized trade, growing our economies, this all driven by technological advances and easy profits. And because right now we have over 1 billion people who are food insecure. They just don't have enough food to eat. We are doing it all wrong at this time. And meat, eating meat, is at the very foundation of all of this. So my efforts over the next year, the next 12 months, starting in September, I will start a national worldwide campaign to educate people about the consequences of eating meat. And when we can say no to meat and we choose a plant-based resource, we are helping protect the lemurs, protect the snow leopards, protect all the different species. And we're also helping our health. We're helping to lessen the global warming and methane, which is 22 times more potent than carbon dioxide. Now, let's go over and say hello to my guest who is standing by. James Otto, I mentioned at the beginning of the program, is a civil rights attorney practicing in Northridge, California, and he specializes in the protection of American workers and green card holders from illegal civil rights violations. And for many years, he has investigated the flip side of outsourcing of jobs overseas and has filed lawsuits on behalf of American workers who have been fired from U.S. employers who want to import immigrants into the U.S. utilizing the visa work programs in order to work for lower salaries. And he is currently handling a criminal fraud lawsuit against Disney Corporation for firing over 700 competent U.S. workers so Disney could import less trained foreign workers to replace them. And a similar lawsuit has been filed against the Screen Actors Guild. And Jim was a former Marine officer in the 1970s, and he also worked for the California Department of Fair Employment and Housing, prosecuting violators of civil rights laws. His website is lawofficeofjamesaotto.com. Nice to have you with us today, James.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
James, before we get into the larger national problem today of corporations and even our own government taking advantage of the H-1B visa program that enables companies to find ways to fire trained, better salaried American employees in order to replace them with foreign workers who will work for far, far less and zero benefits, let's first take a look at your current lawsuit against Disney Corporation for firing over 700 competent American employees. Now, you describe this as Disney's no U.S. worker employment policy. So please explain the Disney example and the corporate benefits and profit motives behind this practice. And then in turn, how this practice further contributes to the wiping out of the middle class by replacing American and legal workers with lower paid immigrants. The forum is yours.
Sure, thank you. Well, the Disney example is really just a mirror of what's been going on all across this country, where corporations have petitioned Congress, and Congress has agreed to create a set of immigration visas. Actually, Congress calls it non-immigrant visas, but never mind that, because these are immigrants that come over to replace U.S. workers. And from San Diego to Bangor, Maine, every corporation that has ever brought in an H-1B or a B-1 or an F-1 or any other guest worker visa has done so to replace U.S. workers. Disney's motivation is to exclude U.S. workers from the workforce. They don't consider U.S. workers to be hired or hireable anymore. They don't want to hire and employ U.S. workers. Now, they have to go at a slow rate, because imagine once all of America finds out the reality of what's been going on the last 20 years, you know, there's going to be a revolution. And the only way that these corporations can keep Congress on their side is by going slow. So 700 workers doesn't sound small, but compared to the total workforce in Disney and the total workforce in the U.S., it's, you know, relatively minor. But it still puts 700 people out of work, destroys their lives, destroys their dreams. And that's the whole motivation. Yeah, people will say, you know, corporations just want to lower their costs. Well, that's all very well and nice, but they have to do it legally. The best motivations in the world are still illegal when they violate a law. And just like in the 1950s, there were people who didn't want to hire African-Americans simply because of the color of their skin. And times have changed and laws have been passed, especially the 1962 Civil Rights Act, now known as Title VII, but which prohibits any business decision made on race, gender, or national origin. And that is what is going on here, is that Disney Corporation and various other corporations have decided to exclude U.S. workers from the workforce. And we could see it all over this country. For example, Senator Grassley from Iowa is head of the Judiciary Committee in Congress. And after his investigation and hearings, he proclaimed, you know, the guest worker visa is rife with fraud and abuse. And he specifically pointed to advertisements, for example, outside of Chicago, where the advertisement boldly states H-1B holders only, which clearly excludes U.S. citizens or green card holders because you're not on an H-1B visa. other entry-level jobs are F1 students only, foreign students only. There are American corporations such as Amazon and McAfee and Synopsys and other big corporations who hold job fairs across this country, but only invite H-1B holders, only invite foreigners to these job fairs. So the exclusion of American workers is well underway, and the motivation may be, like I said, may be reduce costs, which on a, from a shareholder's perspective is very noble, but you cannot exclude any individual simply because of race, color, disability, or national origin. That's an illegal act, and businesses have been shut down in the past. Unfortunately, our government doesn't want to enforce this law and protect Americans. You know, let's just start off with the fact that the government knows exactly what's going on here. They know the numbers, and the numbers are just horrendous. For example, the Department of Homeland Security is in charge of securing the borders, and they control and operate the immigration entry ports for foreigners who have to come, when they come into this country, come in with authorization known as a visa. And so every individual who comes into this country is recorded, the name, the visa, the purpose of the trip, and is then summarized into what the what Homeland Security calls their annual yearbook. And you could look at the number of foreign workers and trainees that are brought into the United States. And foreign workers and trainees fall under these worker visa programs, which every expert will tell you, and based on my research, it's absolutely true. Every foreign worker that comes into the United States is meant to replace, not to supplement, but to replace a competent U.S. worker who is already holding down that job. It's now widespread and accepted. And again, going back to Disney, I've actually got Disney's corporate documents regarding what they call, quote, knowledge transfer, close quote. In other words, the individual U.S. worker, the competent U.S. worker, has to train the incompetent foreign import because the foreign import simply doesn't know what he or she is doing. And I want to echo, at this time, I want to echo exactly what you said in your introduction, is this isn't about the individual workers. These people are just trying to make a living, and maybe they don't even know what they're getting into. But it's the corporations, the corporate bosses, the board of directors of Disney who have made the conscious and malicious decision to exclude U.S. workers from their workforce. But getting back to the Department of Homeland Security, they've collected all of these numbers, and when you add them up, for example, between 2007 and 2010, for the listeners who don't remember, that was a period of great recession in this country. People were losing their jobs left and right. In fact, the Department of Labor calculated and recorded that over 8 million U.S. workers lost their jobs during that recession. Coincidentally, during that same period in that deep recession, Department of Homeland Security records that over 8 million foreign workers came in to take U.S. jobs. That's more than a mere coincidence. I have an MBA in finance, and statistically, that's really more than a mere coincidence. Not to mention the fact that during that same recession, U.S. corporations, the corporations that were importing, heavily importing foreign workers, were recording and reporting to their shareholders record profits. So we have an actual blueprint of corporate intent to exclude U.S. workers. Now, I'm not saying that the U.S. corporations created the recession on purpose. Okay, we all know that that recession was created by the greed and fraud of Wall Street corporations. But clearly, other U.S. corporations took advantage of that time period to lay off U.S. workers, telling them, you know, misrepresenting to them that they weren't making any money, so therefore they had to let them go. Well, as soon as the U.S. worker was out the door, they brought in the foreign imports. Okay.
And James, I would like to get you go into a little deeper understanding of something, but I want to preface my question with this thought. about 5 years ago, and it took 5 years to finish a film because the economy kept changing and circumstance kept changing. The documentary was called Poverty Inc. I remember something very specific at the beginning of this. Down in Cape Canaveral, a lot of government programs with NASA were being eliminated. And one day, I said, I know where the homeless vets are. I finished interviewing them, but I'd like to interview other people who are homeless. And a person said, there's a very unique place here. This is outside of Orlando. And they said, it's a park. Not very often people go there, but you would find interesting people there. So I went over there, and I had my camera ready, and the first vehicle I came up to was a big Cadillac Escalade. And this was in February, and it was a little chilly out. And as I walked around, I saw four people standing in front of the car, and two were teenagers, girls, and I'm assuming a mother and father. And I looked, and they were cooking noodles on the radiator. And I said, I'm doing a film on poverty in America. Would you be willing just to speak with me about your experience? And the husband said, no, I don't want to talk about it. But the wife said, did I see you on PBS? I said, yes. She said, oh, you're the guy who talks about health? I said, yes. She said, yeah. At least she didn't feel that I was a total stranger, you know, and had some ulterior motive. So we sat and we talked. And here's what I learned from them. I learned that she was making about $150,000. He was making close to $200,000. They had a really nice big house. And when the economy started to go bad, they were told repeatedly, you don't have to worry. You both have master's degrees. You're experts in this engineering. There's going to be lots of work. And so when their kids wanted to go to private schools and when they wanted all the advantages of upper middle class background, and they had worked hard and long for their accomplishments, they didn't cut back. And then one was fired. They didn't cut back. The other one was fired. They still didn't want to come back. And I said, why didn't you cut back? And well, the daughter said to me, well, do you know what it's like when everyone expects you to be keeping up with them and you go to the mall and you all have to buy all this stuff and then you have to go to a birthday party and bring all this stuff? And I said, what would happen if you didn't? Well, you'd be excluded. And I said, have you excluded people who were your former friends because their parents were hard hit? And one of the teenage daughters says, yes, we did, and shame on us for doing that because all of our friends exclude us now because they know that we lost our home. Evidently, they remortgaged, and then when they went to get work, now here's what leads me to you. They wanted to get work at their previous level, and they felt because they had over 20 years each at that level that they would get it, and their headhunting agency gave them some impression that that was possible, but then a lot of other people who were equally talented and degreed and lost their jobs, and one day they were told, look, you got about 100 people looking for your job. So understand something, take a lower paying job, cut it in half. They wouldn't do it. And so they lost a year. In the year they lost all their savings. And then one day they realized they had nothing. Now the wife cleans houses and the husband goes around and does all the chores, does the laundry, takes the laundromat, etc. And they showed me the back and they actually had put little tiny cots in their car so they could at least live there and get a little portable refrigeration unit. And the husband said, you realize that all my former buddies, they're worse off than we are. They're living back home with their parents who are senior citizens or brothers and sisters. We all got creamed. And he said, and you know what we're up against now? And I said, no, what? He says, I'm not competing. The guy was wrong. When I go for a job, I'm not competing against 100 other guys from NASA who were out of work looking for the same job. I'm competing against a guy from South Korea who's got a PhD in the same field, willing to work for $35,000 a year. That's what he told me. True or not, that's what he said. And he said, so how in the world am I supposed to compete when I was making $200,000, I'm willing to work for maybe $90,000, under the worst case scenario, $50,000, and some of my friends are working at McDonald's and boxing over at Walmart, some are even at car washes, for anything, and these guys are coming in and they got our jobs. So there are no jobs out there for our group of people. They're already filled. And I didn't know that at the time. This is several years ago. And I thought, well, how many people could have come in under this visa program? And you just answered it. Because, James, you just said that for 7 to 8 million Americans' jobs lost, there were 7 to 8 million who came in under the visa, but we didn't hear about this. This wasn't publicized. This wasn't some great announcement. And that's where the big profits came from. So now my question, because I just wanted to give you that as a little background, briefly summarize the H-1B visa program. In addition, bring in Hillary Clinton. And what other notable politicians and corporate executives have been touting and supporting it? And also, I understand that while Hillary was in the State Department, she was implementing this outsourcing policy in U.S. foreign consulates to get rid of American workers. Now, I can be wrong. If I'm wrong, say I'm wrong on this. And also that Obama had a hand in promoting it, too. Now, when Hillary now is saying she's all about helping us understand free trade and being on the side of the worker, we have in our possession 54 separate speeches that she gave to consulate executives and leaders of nations around the world while she was Secretary of State promoting the Trans-Pacific Partnership. 54 times in 54 countries she promoted the Trans-Pacific Partnership, knowing full well it was being done in secret, knowing full well that its laws would supersede our own sovereign laws, and knowing that American workers would be adversely affected. So that's one side of the issue. On the other one, she's been promoting this H-1B visa in quiet, but knowing that it would absolutely impact American voters. And those are the people that she's going to stand right in front of and say, I'm for you. Those are my thoughts. I'd like to hear yours.
Okay. Well, let's start off with the fact that Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State Clinton, and as well as the rest of Congress, knows about the devastating effect of these H-1Bs, these guest worker visas, the devastating effect it has on U.S. workers. And because the Government Accounting Office, the GAO, has done several investigations and has always concluded that the guest worker visa program, the H-1Bs, are rife with fraud and abuse. You know, the corporations that bring in, that import these workers, lie to the American government. Now, I'll get into that in just a moment. But to speak specifically about Secretary of State Clinton, in 2010, as Secretary of State, she authorized investment of over $50 million U.S. dollars to build computer schools in Sri Lanka and Armenia and various other foreign countries with the noted intention of creating these graduates who would then come over on H-1B visas to take U.S. jobs. So that's your taxpayer at work putting you out of work. And then in 2011, actually December 7th, 2011, Secretary Clinton, in writing, which I happen to have, authorized the U.S. embassies in India to take all H-1B and other immigration visas without limit and process them. The impact of that is that Congress, in their H-1B program, limited the number of imports to 60,000 unless you have some super advanced degree, an MBA or a PhD. Then there's an extra 20,000. So at best, we can only import from around the world 80,000 H-1Bs. But in 2011, Secretary Clinton authorized limitless numbers of imports from India. Also, the philosophy of this, and I don't want to become a conspiracy theorist or anything, but there's a gentleman named Alan Greenspan, and he's a noted economist, and he advised the presidents from Richard Nixon until the last George Bush on economy, and he was recently retired, and he wrote a book called Age of Turbulence. And Mr. Greenspan's been on the talk show circuit, advancing his books. And he's very proud of the fact that he thinks the government has adopted his advice, which is to eliminate all immigration laws to allow the free flow of foreign workers into this country to reduce middle-class wages. because Mr. Greenspan not only says, you know, orally, he said, and in writing in his book, he said that the American middle class makes too much money and needs to take a pay cut. And this is perhaps his way of reducing American middle class, because it does have a major, major impact on this, on us. Even though the Secretary of Labor in 2001, a lady named Elaine Chao, she once wrote, this is really rather astonishing, that the importation of foreign workers will not adversely affect the wages and working conditions of U.S. workers. Of course, tell that to the unemployed, you know, unemployed worker who can't seem to find a job or has to compete with foreign workers, the low wage scales from imported foreigners. And the key word in that last sentence was compete. You know, if Americans were given an equal access, a fair playing field, a level playing field, they can compete with anybody. But what's going on now, especially in Disney and other major corporations, is there is no playing field. U.S. workers aren't allowed on the playing field. They're not asked, they're not asked to take a pay cut or to help the company out because they need to make more money, or they're going through financial crisis. They're not even asked that. And when something is said, it's typically a lie. For example, I represent 18 individuals who are suing Molina Healthcare, Inc., a $5 billion a year corporation out of Long Beach, California. And they were laid off and told an absolute lie, which was that because of economic downturns, the company had to lay off, had to go through a reduction in force, and they laid them off. But it turned out later on that the company had actually made $500 million more that year than they had the preceding year, which they made actually $800 million in profit. So they were making profits of close to $1 billion that year that they decided to have a reduction in force.
James, we're out of time. You're doing a terrific job. We all respect the work that you're doing to stand up and expose this. And at this moment, since we have Bernie Sanders and even the contemptible Donald Trump and Carly Fiorina, or whatever her name is, they're all preaching that they are dedicated to protecting American jobs. Clearly, the H-1B and this outsourcing habit does not protect or secure American employment. It is only a boon for employers, and it contributes nothing to restoring the dismal U.S. economy and only throws more people into unemployment and eventually poverty. And yet more and more politicians are supporting a foreign workforce. So your work and the lawsuits you're bringing should at least make it onto the center stage. And I'm asking this audience to take this information today. Please take the segment of this interview with my guest, James Otto, O-T-T-O, website lawofficeofjamesaotto.com, and share it so we can get them to discuss this in the debates, if we can. They may not want to, and certainly Hillary Clinton, it would be great to have someone challenge her on her support of this at embassies around the world. But keep up the good work. James, we look forward to another discussion down the road.
Thank you very much.
James Otto from North Ridge, California. I'm Gary Null. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Have a nice day.